Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 21, for the week of December 25th, 2006. Too much chocolate. Hey everybody, this is Alex Lindsay, and we are back for another week of MacBreak Weekly. Is that what we're doing today?
Oh, yeah, we're doing MacBreak Weekly today, yeah.
We are doing MacBreak Weekly today. Excellent. We did This Week in Media this morning, so I have to keep track of which one is which.
You should get a big whiteboard.
Yeah, exactly. So you are doing MacBreak Weekly. You are doing Visual VFX Show. You are doing, you know, we just added in the Pixel Corps, we added 60 producers, people who are training to be producers, and we're organizing and everything else. And so soon I will really, truly have to put something up on the wall. So as you may have guessed, Merlin Mann is back.
Hello.
Merlin looks so different. I know you guys are just listening to Merlin. He probably sounds pretty... Say something else, Merlin.
Hello. Yeah. Well, the problem is, Alex, I was looking like a kind of a Sasquatch, a Yeti.
The locks were getting a little long.
Yeah, I wasn't sure where I was going with that. I didn't have a trajectory that I was satisfied with, so...
I think you did
Where did you get your haircut, Alex?
I don't think that's a good...
No?
I actually get my haircut at a nice salon. And
oh, really?
Yeah. It started off as... Here's the deal. It started off as a...
You're paying a lot for that haircut, Alex?
The one I have... You got to get... He's looking at me. I got a baseball hat on right now. So, I do. The gym that I work out in and the place that I get my haircut happens to be right next to the office. So it doesn't have a lot to do with how much it costs or how snooty it is. It just has to do with it is less than a block from where I'm working, so I don't have to think about it. And so like I pay an incredible amount for my gym just because if it's four blocks away or five blocks away, I won't go.
I'm just telling you, man, you walk up two blocks. You walk up to Montgomery,
mm-hmm.
Go to Montgomery and Market, go to the arcade, go to Joey. Joey will set you up with a $20 haircut. You know what I'm talking about? Like across the street from Stacy's, go over there, get a $20 haircut. That's a $20 haircut. Not bad.
It's very nice. It's very nice.
But it's very nice to be here. And I mean,
Merlin's glasses. He has no glasses either.
Yeah, you're all very fuzzy to me right now.
Are you just walking around fuzziness?
No, you know what? What is it? An optometrist? Is that the person? We are already down a rat hole. We're only like 30 seconds in.
That's fine.
Yeah, the glasses help a little, but not a lot. I think I mainly have muscular eye strain from the computer screen and whatnot.
Oh, see, I'm blind without them.
Are you really?
Genetically, you know, if I don't wear my glasses, I pretty much can't get out of the office.
You're a basket case without a series of technologies to buttress you up.
Yeah, pretty much. If we weren't living in this day and age, I'd be like sitting in the back of some room just, you know, waiting for people to give me food. We also have here, now when I get this right, Dan... Dilger,
right?
Dilger. I thought I was going to hit it right.
Almost
on.
Had it, yeah.
Dilger, Dan, and a lot of you will know if you go up to the web, you're going to think of Dan Eran. Is it Eran?
Well, Daniel Aaron is
Aaron.
My first name.
Now I'm notorious for this. I don't get anybody's name correct the first time. In fact, you'll have to be on for a couple shows before I really hit it right on. And it took me most of the season to get Kenji's last name pronounced correctly. So, but Dan has an excellent, excellent website called Roughly Drafted, and you're slowly moving towards really having a magazine. I mean, you really put out a lot of stuff. How often do you put stuff out here?
On average, I tend to post something once every other day, but it's sometimes hard to maintain.
And one of the things that I really like about Dan's website is that it's something that it does definitely. You feel like you've really thought it out, you know, unlike me, who mostly just, you know, talks out my butt. I mean, me and Merlin just kind of say whatever we think. Dan's input actually is well thought out. And so we thought it'd be fun to have him on the show for this, in this holiday season.
Well, thanks. I get kind of obsessive. I start editing and I spend a lot of time on an article and then I finally get it up and then I have to put up another one afterwards. So it's kind of an addiction.
I mostly have to have someone read through mine to make sure that it's actually readable. I'm horrible dyslexia, so I have to, like, every time you get an email from me, it like requires like four or five passes before it's actually readable. The first pass is just
that's why they're so short. I always wondered your emails
that's
are
why
very
they're,
short.
I very short emails because I have to proofread every email.
Fewer chances for typos.
Exactly.
That's smart.
So that's why I do it, because it really does. It's very painful for me to write an email, and which is funny when I write for magazines, because it's really painful. So anyway, we've got a bunch of news. We've got lots of fun stuff coming up here. Before we get into the news, though, because I know some people won't make it to the end of the show, I want to make sure that people know what's going on. We've got Macworld coming up. Macworld's going to be a big, big show for us. A couple things. One is, if you haven't subscribed to Mac Break, the video, you want to do it, because Mac Break is going to be putting out updates probably almost every day of the week of Macworld, really showing different stuff that's going on, covering the expo floor, talking to people, and so on. And there's a bunch of events going on. Also, your favorite Mac Break guys will be at the Apple Store 6 p.m. on Tuesday. And then, so that's going to be the Tuesday after the keynote, Leo and Merlin and myself.
Is it Tuesday or Monday?
It is Tuesday.
Is it definitely Tuesday? Because we had Monday last time.
No, it's Tuesday night.
Tuesday, and that's Tuesday the 9th.
The 9th.
At 6 p.m.
6 p.m. At the Apple Store. And we're going to talk about whatever Steve talked about. So we're going to talk about what Steve talked about. And then we're going to go to the 21st Amendment at 7 o'clock, 7:30. And we're going to get, we're going to tie some on. So it's going to be a great evening. And so we're hoping that a lot of people will join us. On Wednesday night, there is the Final Cut Pro user group over at the Mezzanine, which is usually pretty good. It's about $10. The one at the Apple Store is free, $10 for the Mezzanine, but it's got a lot of great Apple folks and great editors and so on and so forth talking on Wednesday night. On Thursday, there's a podcaster, Mac podcaster, Adam Christensen, and a whole bunch of other guys are doing one at the Apple Store again at 6 p.m. And then they're going to have a get-together right afterwards at the Metreon in Jillian's.
Are you going to that?
I'm going.
I'm going, too.
Well, I think we're going to try to record it. So that'll be part of some of the stuff that we're doing that week. So I'm going. Marilyn's going. Dan might be going.
I'm
going
to be in the Virgin Islands.
Dan's not going at all.
Dan is not going.
How could you be going to the Virgin Islands in the middle of Macworld? How could that happen?
Well, I'm going to be going Wednesday night, so I'll be there for a couple of days.
Okay. We'll just drop it. We'll just drop the whole thing. So anyway, those are the things that are going on right now at Macworld. You definitely want to stay tuned for that, and I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
How'd you wangle that? How'd you wangle getting us into the Apple Store on Steve Day?
I actually have spoken for a while. I was at the Apple Store probably almost every week, or someone from the Pixel Corps was. So we've got a pretty good, Travis and the boys. Oh, we know those guys pretty well over there. And so I was just over chatting with Travis, and he asked if we wanted to come over. The key with them is to talk to Apple, the Apple Store, and have something useful. Have Leo. Is key number one. Have Leo in your show, number one. And number two, talk to the Apple Store, 6 months before the actual event. And it's hard to get both of those in the same place at the same time. And so
that'll be fun.
It will be a mob. If it's starting at 6 p.m., if you want a seat, I would highly suggest showing up at 5. Just so you know, it's going to be typically when Leo shows up at the Apple Store, it is a hectic time.
I went to see Twit there one time. You guys were shooting Twit there, and it was out of control.
Yeah. So if you want, as I said, if you want a seat, there's only 35 seats, and there's going to be 200 or 300 people there, is my guess. But it's a lot of fun, and even if you're standing and hanging out and so on and so forth, it's really worth going. It's a great communal event. No matter how much you hear or see or whatever, and I'm trying to work out some of my ways that people further back can hear us and so on and so forth, and we're gonna have people like interacting and chatting with us. So and I think we're gonna have a lot of great folks floating around in the crowd. I know we've invited a bunch of people. I don't want to say who, but I think it'll be a really good evening. So definitely check it out. So we've got all kinds of news. Merlin, what is the big news of the week? I figured I'd throw Merlin there.
Oh, man.
The well, you were writing it all down before the show. I mean, so I figured I'd
just... This is purely because of the deficits in my mind that I've written these down. This is not any kind of an agenda. Well, I'm going to throw it to Dan because we shouldn't start with Vista because it's a Mac show. That would be a letdown.
Oh, let's start with Vista.
Yeah.
Let's get it over with.
There's a fella who's written a technical fella who's written a very long 6,000 word explication.
Who is this fellow?
With his thoughts. Dan, tell us about this fellow. This is a guy who wrote this long post about Vista that basically, I want to remember the exact quote, was that it's, what did he say? It was the longest suicide note in tech history about the problems that he saw in Vista DRM and interoperability. You read up on that, didn't you?
Yeah, I think the guy that wrote it had some connection with medical imaging. And
so who is this fellow? Do we know?
I was looking it up here. I was trying to see if I could find it. But he's from, is it the Australia?
All I can remember is the URL had CS in it.
And so everyone just listen.
The Inquirer.
We'll put it in the show notes. It is www.cs.auckland.ac.nz. And then it's got a whole bunch of stuff in the end. But it's Peter Gutman put this up. And he's got an executive summary.
The title of it is A Cost Analysis of Windows Vista Content Protection.
I'll read you the executive summary, so then you get an idea of what we're talking about here. Windows Vista includes an extensive reworking of core OS elements in order to provide content production for so-called premium content, typically HD data from Blu-ray and HD DVD sources. Providing this protection incurs considerable costs in terms of system performance, system stability, technical support overhead, and hardware and software costs. These issues affect not only users of Vista, but the entire PC industry, since the effects of the protection measures extend to cover all hardware and software that will ever come into contact with Vista, even if it's not used directly with Vista. For example, hardware in the Macintosh computer or on a Linux server. This document analyzes the cost involved in Vista's content protection and the collateral damage that this incurs throughout the computer industry.
Yeah,
I'd never seen that text. I was really scared that I wasn't going to make it through. So that's the executive summary that gives you a sense of what he's talking about,
it's something that people, it's related to something people have been talking about for a while, which is that granted it's a Mac show we're talking here, but now with the ability to run Windows so easily on your Mac,
right,
increasingly the issues that had only been the domain of PC users are going to become problems or challenges or opportunities for Mac users as well. So
it is, and it's also when we really look at the business model of where Apple's going and Apple's possible growth, I think this is why this is important for Mac Break, is that if Windows makes it very difficult and painful to use and affects, bunges up the whole system, I think that affects Apple in a positive way. Dan?
Well, there's two things. This the topic that he's covering kind of relates to Blu-ray and HD DVD and high-end video that the industry is paranoid about people copying. And it's kind of an extension of what we already have with DVD. If anyone, including Apple, who puts a DVD player in the computer, has to agree to certain things, you can't, like the region encoding, Apple can't let you just change the region encoding any number of times you want. They have to meet the industry.
Which I think is like a limit of like five?
Five times, something like that. And then it's not supposed to change anymore. So those are things put in place by the DVD consortium. And so Microsoft is kind of doing the same thing with Vista. And a lot of things they're doing are very similar to the things they did before with Windows Media Player and Plays for Sure. And basically the things he's covering in this article pertain to if you have a Blu-ray player in your computer, Vista and managing that high resolution video won't allow it to play out through any device that you could, is designed so you can't play super high definition video out through a regular video port and record it and burn it to a regular DVD.
Which I guess HDMI, the codec of HDMI is supposed to have copy protection built into it. So,
right.
So there's a way to really slow that. They can slow that down, through that process, if as long as everybody plays along.
Right, so Vista isn't inventing anything terribly new. It's like you say, it's a combination of hardware things that are already in place, and they're just kind of extending that. And so it does kind of play into everyone, whether it's Windows computers or Apple's computers, but Windows definitely does some the things he addresses here refer specifically to drivers and things like that, and how Microsoft rather is trying to kind of herd the industry in doing what Apple does all by itself.
Well, and I think that this gets back into who, and we've talked about this a couple times in the show, so I won't belabor it, but this really gets to who each company caters to. And I really believe that, that Microsoft really caters to the industry. So they cater to the MPAA, they cater to the Hollywood, you know, the Hollywood power structure, while Apple is mostly worried about what do we have to add. They're mostly worried about the consumer and how do we make sure that the consumer gets what they want, and we'll only add what we absolutely have to, you know, to get. You know, we constantly want to minimize the impact of DRM on the consumer, and I don't think that that's Microsoft's focus.
What does this mean to the garden variety Mac user who's running Windows on their Mac machine? Is this so? One of the things I've seen a commenter on Metafilter, it's Arcan JG, is talking about how it can. One of the things it can do is force the HD to downsample to 480p if everything's not lining up. You know, all the way down.
I think the bottom line is it's going to be a lot easier to watch your Blu-ray on the Mac side of your computer than it is on your Windows side of your computer. So I think if you're going to, you know, for those of us who have a choice, you know, when we're using Vista, I think we're going to most likely not be using Vista as our format for watching movies.
Well, one thing I was just curious about, and this. Goes straight into the talking out of my butt area, but the so one thing I'm curious about though is you know, when you're running something like Parallels or whatever you're running, there's some kind of an emulation going on. Does running Vista on a Mac make it in any way more hackable to get around any of this stuff than it would be to run it on a PC?
Since not on the Mac side. Not on the Mac side.
Really? It's just the same thing in terms of, it's even though it's emulating, in some cases, different pieces of hardware and software, it's...
It'll if you get a virus or you get messed up or whatever, it'll trash the volume that Parallels is using, but it's not gonna leak over to your Mac side. Not that I know of. I mean, I don't think that's really an issue. But I do think that it is it's something that is important for people to pay attention to. I don't know when I'm planning to. I mean, I have Windows on my MacBook Pro or whatever. But I don't have any intention of going to Vista anytime soon. I think Leo may have already done it. I think Leo likes to stay on the edge of that. I don't, unless there's something really necessary for me to move over, I'm not gonna.
And are you, I think are you running Windows on a Mac, Dan?
I've used XP. Yeah, I mean,
are you running it on your Mac or are you running it on a PC?
I've used Parallels and I've also used Bootcamp to run it directly, and I have XP running on a PC computer as well.
And so I don't, and we're not alone. I mean, 3/4 of the PC users aren't planning to upgrade to Vista next year. I really think that while this article is talking about this being a long suicide note by Microsoft, I truly think Vista is the last OS that Microsoft will ever write. I think it may continue to update it. You know, it may update it for the next 5 to 10 years, but I don't think that they're going to. I think it's the age of the OS is nearing its end. They've got an enormous amount of spaghetti code. They can't really change it. They can't. I mean, their best option is to, you know, further develop the Xbox. You know, and so, but I don't think we're going to see another. I don't think we're going to see it. I don't think we're going to see another operating system.
We had a similar conversation about OS X not too long ago, and whether they'll get to a point like, you know, is there, you know, what's going to come after, you know, after the next release.
Well, and Apple's already said that they're going to slow down the rollout of OSs after they get, you know, they've already said that there are, and they already have. We're not seeing them quite as fast as they used to come out. But I think that they've gotten to a point where they're happy and now they want to just, you know, kind of see, you know, solve a lot of the major issues. I mean, there's lots of, I think more every day there's things that I want them to take out of OS X than put in.
Really? And you'd like to see those kind of shunted off into other products? Or
I just want the...
Like the dock. We're back to the dock.
I just want them to turn the darn dock off.
Alex has a problem with his dock.
I hate the dock. So,
But just so nothing... I mean, I guess, you know, again, we're probably just shooting fish in a barrel here. But so is anything that the Mac user running Windows needs to pull away from this article?
Yeah, don't get Vista.
Oh. Well, and beyond that, you make kind of an interesting comment about... the idea of hardware lockdowns and how it kind of affects everyone. Reading that kind of reminded me of what happened in the 90s with audio. Mm-hmm. Remember that Sony came out with a mini disc and there were all these efforts to come out with a new thing that would replace the cassette and the LP, and nothing really did. And the reason it didn't was because DRM was so onerous on it that it really prevented those products from working. And
Well, you look at the PSP, which should have done really, really well. I mean, it's done well. It's done okay, but it's dropping off quickly. And it really could have owned the market. It came out. It's a better video platform in many ways than the video iPod. It could have done all those things. But Sony's obsession with keeping it so locked down and so hard to get movies onto it and so difficult to work all that stuff, and rather than making it part of just you could do it any way you want, I think is a big thing that really stifled it. Would you agree?
Well, yeah. And then in kind of a parallel with that, with the iPod and what Microsoft was doing with Plates for sure, the iPod was open, and that's one of the things that people liked about it, is they didn't have to. There was no expectation that people would go to some store and buy all their music from it. Whereas with the Plates for sure, the whole idea of it was that you're buying a device, and then it was going to hook into a subscription model, and you're going to pay an ongoing fee to have music, something that people had never really done before. It's like paying for the radio. So Microsoft and its partners charted out this whole thing of how the world was just going to run in and pay for
rent.
All this.
Yeah. Which is like the holy grail for the RIA and the MPAA is just everyone's just going to rent their music. They're never going to buy it again. And the problem is consumers just didn't get sold on it.
Yeah. So, but there was this whole forward plan of how everyone's going to pay for it. And it just didn't happen. And that may happen in kind of a similar way with these high definition formats like Blu-ray and HD DVD. That are competing to kind of replace the DVD. And it was just in the news recently that VHS has just now been eclipsed by DVD. That it was just in the last couple of days they mentioned that the percentage of households that have VHS.
Yeah,
VHS.
Only now?
Yeah, I know.
That's really surprising.
We're in San Francisco. I think in San Francisco it happened a long time ago. But
I just think in terms of media, you just don't see the opportunity to buy. You don't see VHS
I've seen
tapes
it at truck stops.
Even. Nice.
I see cassettes at truck stops too.
No, Alex, you're part of the problem.
it's a pretty rare thing to see now. And that is the big question though that I have that gets into this whole is DRM not only going to we're talking about Vista here, but does DRM really have is it going to kill off the Blu-ray and the HD DVD? Because I mean you're getting into this point where you know Azurius released Zudio. Have you played with Zudio at all?
No, I haven't.
So
the BitTorrent client?
It's their BitTorrent. It's like their for-profit BitTorrent.
Oh.
It sits on top of Azurius, and it's this huge BitTorrent engine that lets you do HD. You know, and so the BBC is partnering with them, and then you have the Democracy Player, and the Democracy Player lets you bring down HD. Now, Mark Cuban has said that this is never going to go anywhere. HD TV is going to blow away internet video. But the question is that, you know, by the end, and we talked a little bit about this on TWIM, so I'm not going to get into it. But the question are any of these DRMs, are all of them going to slowly just kill off these formats where we end up just downloading stuff from iTunes?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of options that could certainly replace having a new HD optical disc format and just never have it take place. I mean, it doesn't have to be killed. It just might never take hold.
Right, because right now the PS3 is getting walloped by the Wii. You know, it's really not getting the kind of bandwidth.
That's the thing you mentioned, that Mark Cuban thing, just seems kind of interesting to me.
Well, he's got a vested interest in his opinion.
Well, it's funny. In the same way that, you know, voicemail didn't go away when we got email and, you know, meetings didn't go away when we got Skype. Yeah, you know, now we're talking here about my field. But, I mean, you know, some of these technologies, they're just, I mean, there's something that has really, for example, look at, for example, YouTube, right? YouTube, in terms of quality, you know, it's the quality of a YouTube video is not high, but for its medium and for what it's for, it's incredibly sticky and engaging, and people love it. And for certain kinds of media, I'm not going to sit and watch Apocalypse Now in a YouTube size and format, but for the kinds of content that YouTube is pushing out, it's incredibly sticky and engaging. And I don't know. It just seems to me that it's really, it's sometimes it's perilous and it's very easy to get into these mutually exclusive arguments about media and who's going to use what and what's going to replace what. And maybe I'm just not a very picky consumer, but I think those arguments tend to go nowhere. And I wonder in some ways if a case can be made for, you know, I don't know. There's a part of me that wonders when more people find out about things like Handbrake and read things like Mark Pilgrim's tutorial on how to back up your DVDs,
right?
That, you know, I wonder in some ways if the longevity of certain media are going to come down to how you can get stuff off there and put it onto your devices, because more and more people hate being locked up by this stuff. You know, says the guy who buys, you know, a bunch of stuff off iTunes. But
I even know a lot of people on iTunes. I mean, I'm too lazy. I buy stuff off iTunes and then I just buy them again. I literally, you know, I'll lose right. The songs and I just buy them again and everything else. But I know a lot of people who immediately, you know, strip the DRM out of even iTunes, you know, and it's not something that they wait. They just don't want to deal with it later. They don't want to, you know, they, right. You know, and so, so it's one of those things that I think that, it's going to be interesting to see. I think people always want to have something that is transparent to them. And the closer the industry can get to transparency, the easier it's going to be for them to not have this issue. You know, but the problem is they don't want it to be transparent. They want it to be.
And what's funny is there's all these, you know, we're probably going down the traditional rat hole here, but there's all these little islands of conversation that don't always get connected up with each other. And one of them that I think is really interesting is you'll have this one alleyway conversation that's all about, you know, HD, and it's never going to work because it's so big, and how are you going to download that over the internet? And then there's this other discussion over here about BitTorrent, and that's we only ever talk about BitTorrent and how it's used for stealing and stuff.
Well, and when you pull those two together.
You get something really powerful going on.
The ability to move enormous files. Yeah,
absolutely. And that's the thing that the real smack on the head for me with BitTorrent was just the first time I used it and realized that, you know, for somebody who had used Napster back in whatever 99 and 2000, to now realize that this was a medium where the more popular something was, the more quickly it was going to get out, which is the kind of idea that it just seems like some of these companies.
Well, and that's the interesting thing is a big file that a lot of people watch is actually the perfect solution for BitTorrent.
And you're not moving, you know, 6 ounces of plastic across the company in a country in a truck.
But what you needed was, what you needed for that to work was someone to start building organized systems that allow you to cascade who gets it first, you know, so that, and I think that I don't know how much that's happened so far in the democracy or the Zudio player, but that is where you send it out to 10, then 100, then 1,000, and then flip it on. What you don't want to do is have it all be one piece. You know, you don't want to send it out to 1,000,000 all at one time. You want to cascade that so that the torrent works correctly.
And maybe to bring it quickly back to the Mac, because that's theoretically what the podcast is about.
It may be in the next OS.
It could be. But, you know, we go back to also John's suggestion, his pick. Did you play with that BitTorrent X app at all?
It is awesome.
Have you played with this at all?
Have you played?
No.
It's TorrentX.
TorrentX. Sorry, I think it was David Watanabe.
Yeah. There's another app that's called Acquisition. Have you heard of Acquisition?
Right.
So Acquisition is
like
a Nutella.
It's like
a LimeWire Nutella, you know, thing that you can find all kinds of things you shouldn't be finding, and download them really, really easily. So what he did is he mixed that interface where you did all those searches with being able to just search torrent sites. So you're able to just search for torrents, and there's no like, oh, I'm going to move this torrent file over here, and then I'm going to ask Azurius to grab it, or I'm going to do whatever.
Well, three things. He's got these basic searches where you put in terms and it automatically searches the BitTorrent sites of your choice plus Google plus Yahoo, et cetera, et cetera. And then, so the beauty part, and this is where it's an improvement over something like, how do you pronounce it? Azurius. It transparently understands what .torrent means. And as soon as it detects the .torrent, it starts the downloading for you. You don't have to like go and do this sort of, you know, for somebody who's not used to something like Azurius, in addition to that, the interface being a little bit, you know, if you go to the preferences for Azurius, like you could spend Labor Day weekend setting that thing up.
Yeah.
And with this, it's very simple. You say, you know, how much do you want to seed this after you've received it? It's totally transparent. The searching, the adding, and then the downloading is all just completely transparent.
And it's really fast. Mm-hmm. I mean, the other thing is that its ability to grab onto lots of seeds and peers, I was pretty amazed by. I mean, it just really picks it up quickly. So,
and an old Napster trick that I used to remember from back in the day was if you wanted something, you'd start downloading it from 20 different places and then watch the one that went fastest.
Right.
And then, you know what I mean? And you could delete the others. And that's something that never would have occurred to me in Azurius. But now, it's so easy to do.
You just click, click, click.
So I guess what I'm getting at is that, you know, just again to bring it back to the Mac, but this stuff is getting so much more transparent to use that I guess we're twimming a little, but to get to the point where you got to wonder when companies are going to pick up on this stuff. And
well, and that's the rumor. The rumor is, and we'll see, there's lots of rumors and we'll talk about them.
Well, Microsoft has invested a lot in the idea of integrating that into their, I don't know if it's primarily into Windows or if it's kind of a separate product, but they spend a lot of press time talking about that. If you look at what Apple's doing with the iTunes Store, though, it does kind of the same thing without, you know, in a commercial realm. It's not like Skype where you're using your customers to send stuff around. The systems they've built out and the networks that they've built and they have been working on things like that since they started the QuickTime trailer. I mean, when they first started doing that, they have a lot of experience in how to do that on a kind of commercial level of how to distribute high quality.
Well, that's with Akamai, with caching, right, and so on and so forth. The big thing is using everybody's computer, and that's going to be the thing that it'll be interesting to see how that goes. Now, to move on. Speaking of the iPod and moving stuff around, Discovery Channel is going to air the inside story of the Apple iPod and Steve Jobs. And I don't have the schedule, for when this is going to happen. But I find this very interesting. I read an article. There was an article in Wired magazine that I thought was really, really good. It was in the last issue or two of Wired, and we'll try to get it into the show notes here. But it's here it is. Wednesday, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The inside story of the iPod. And so it's a documentary covering the development and spectacular success of blah, 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 blah.
The description on the Discovery site is even better. The iPod revolution goes behind the scenes to uncover how Steve Jobs brought Apple back from the grave to create one
with
of the
iPod.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, I do have to say that I really enjoyed the Wired article, and I just found it fascinating how they slowly built it up and Steve's obsession with not having a power button, which I'm really glad that I have a power button now, by the way. And so all those other things about the development of it and what it took to get there. And I think that it gives you a real insight into how Apple works. And so I think that that looks really, I'm not going to TiVo it because I don't have a cable or a TV, but I'm going to wait until I figure by Thursday or Friday it'll be on iTunes in the Discovery section, and I'll just download it. Have you guys seen them? By the way, I'm gonna go into a rat hole here for a second.
Attaboy.
Merlin has been prescribing Ritalin for me.
I'm usually vice president in charge of rat holes, but I'm happy to cede this one to you.
Have you seen Discovery Atlas?
Discovery Atlas. I don't think I've seen that.
It's one of the best documentary series that I've ever seen. So anyway, now we'll move on.
It is interesting to see how much content is going into the video podcast. I mean, how things are just...
You just get whatever you want now. I mean, I just assume that it's going to be up there. I don't... It's getting to the point, where it's so ubiquitous. Do you buy a lot of stuff, Dan?
I buy occasional things.
Because I have this whole thing, because I don't have cable, I justify it by buying, probably spending anywhere from $10 to $20 a week, just kind of plowing through, I want this, you know, and not having to think about it. The biggest problem I have is actually what's stopping me from buying more from iTunes right now is just that I don't have enough hard drive space. But outside of that, money is not an issue.
I agree with you. I think we keep coming back to that. But mm-hmm. I mean, one of the things I'm going to ask you after we're done here is what hard drive I should get, what big hard drive. Because, all of this stuff just equals more and more gigabytes of crap you're piling up. I have been loving the iTunes Store. I've been using it to buy, shoot, TV shows. I bought 30 Rock. I love it. It does take up the hard drive space.
I've been kind of struggling with the idea of buying TV. That's kind of a hard thing for me to cope with. But
because it's free.
Well,
usually.
I don't know. Just because it doesn't seem like. But yeah, if it gives you what you want, then that's the right thing to do.
Yeah, I like it because what we do with it is I have a 17-inch that I've been using as my old 17-inch, my ginormous 890-pound 17-inch. I've been using it as like a multimedia computer, so I don't need to carry it anywhere. And I'll just have iTunes pull stuff down from there so I can just watch it on the TV with the S-video out. Oh, Alex is holding up a hard drive in a bag.
Hitachi.
Hitachi. What size you got there?
Not only is MacBreak sponsored by Hitachi, Uh-huh. I bought a hard drive. I used some of that money from the sponsorship that they gave us for MacBreak, and I bought a hard drive from them.
Wow. That is really an elegant use of money.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very economical.
Yeah, so this is a 160 gig portable drive.
What do they get for one of those?
Oh, I don't know. You know, here's the problem is the Pixel Core.
What's one of these costs?
I think it's like $200 or
$200 sounds right. Yeah.
$200, $250.
And is this something that a not too bright 40-year-old man could install in his own home? Really?
Yeah.
You don't need a special bracket or a magic wand or anything.
You need
the MacBook Pro.
Yeah, it's in the MacBook. I think you have to take off the bottom though to put it in.
You have to take kind of a lot of off.
Yeah, I heard it's kind of hard.
But that's the fun.
160. You're talking about, I wish I had a 300 gig drive in here. I think I could fill that thing up in no time.
I guess they make a 200 one, but I like to stay one step behind. Whatever the biggest drive is, I usually step back one and let that drive sort out its issues because it's on the bleeding edge, and this is only on the cutting edge. And so the biggest thing has been delayed. It's been sitting in the office for a couple weeks, and I'm just waiting for time to, you know, when do you have a day to only work on your.
This is another time for me to put in a plug for. Well, there's several apps we could put in a plug for, but as long as we've gone down a meta rat hole, Super Duper. This is. Do you Super Duper, Dan?
Yes, I think it's Super Duper.
I always think it when I think of Super Duper. I think of Zabba.
Super Duper. That's Super Trooper. We're all old.
That'd be a good ad.
That'd be really good. Because they could use the money.
They still sell millions of CDs.
Oh, my God. They're incredible.
There's another rat hole for you.
I used to be a carbon copy cloner, man. I think still think it's a good app. But Super Duper is just so brain dead easy to use. And it's so funny. It used to be, do you remember what a... You know what a witch doctor ritual it used to be to replace a hard drive.
It was like a week of here's what it was.
And all the incantations and praying and begging.
It was a full day to get started, and then there was the 4 days of I don't know what's not going to work and what is going to work, or you know, like that. Did you have that experience? Or
I've had a couple of traumatic experiences. One was with an iBook that I was used to taking apart the old titanium PowerBooks. I mean, I'd taken several of those apart. And I told the client that I would get a hard drive put in her iBook. And I gave myself half hour to do it on at midnight, you know. So I started into it. And I think there's 4 or 5 million different types of screws and several of each one. Holding basically, the iBook is wrapped around a hard drive. layers and layers. It's kind of like a...
So actually, after you avoided every possible warranty in the iBook,
there was no warranty left. But I got it in there. But the other thing about hard drives in the new package is that they have a bathtub lifespan curve. You heard that?
No.
That is a new term for me.
That's a bathtub curve of the likelihood of them failing is initially high. So if you look at a chart, and then it goes down, and then it stays it's pretty reliable for 3 years. And then after that 3 year period, then the likelihood of it failing is going back up.
So oddly enough, creating this right after the Apple protection wears off.
Yeah. So with hard drives, I mean, they're kind of engineered with parts that are designed to last for that long because you're probably not going to need, it would be better to have something that could fail in 3 years than something that you couldn't afford. But
if you're running something like that, is what's called SMART, the thing where it's supposedly watching for defects.
I have never found SMART to be very intelligent.
I have never gotten anything out of that. I've always wondered if I'm just not...
I've had laptops that sounded like a helicopter was trying to get out of them, and SMART was just A-okay. You know,
everything's, two thumbs up.
Everything's awesome, and the thing was just... sounded like someone falling down a well.
The conventional wisdom when I was a lad was that if your Mac hard drive was going to break, it would usually be... almost always in the first week to 30 days.
Right.
And then if you were, so like when I was a little kind of seat of the pants Mac admin, I'd always kind of hold my breath for the first 30 days. And we actually did have, we bought 5 LaCie hard drives. They were probably, I don't know, 50 meg hard drives or something in the early 90s. And 3 of the 5 drives crashed within the first 2 weeks. It was just probably a bad day. Who knows? Maybe they dropped a chicken into the assembly line or something. One of those periodic LaCie chickens that falls in. But I hadn't heard of the bathtub curve. 3 years, huh? Thereabouts?
Yeah, so that's kind of what you're describing. It's bad to start off with, and then it goes normal, and then your risk of failure is up again. But
the biggest thing that we cannot underline more in every single show is that a second copy of everything is a good thing.
at least a second copy. This is something, another one of the threads that we'll probably be picking up in future weeks, but we're going to come back to our, we've talked about this a little bit, coming back to our network or NAS hard drive project. We're going to come back to.
I'm going to build one.
There was a, are you, you're going to build it?
I'm going to build it.
There's a lot of interest about that. And as I mentioned, there's a guy who's writing a really good piece for 43 Folders about how the system he's put together, which is looks dynamite. And the
is
word on 5-0? The street.
Is he doing a 5.0?
RAID 5? Yeah, I think it's a RAID 5. I still need to read the article. I owe him. Sorry, I'll get back to you soon. The holidays. But the thing that he mentioned in passing, we need a staff. If we could get a staff to just follow the things we have to understand. He said something about these NAS drives becoming more Mac compatible in the near future, which sounds, because right now there's still some limitations.
Yeah,
these are very, there's certain kinds of, you know, characters that it doesn't like and stuff like that. But
I don't use any of those characters.
An NAFS drive or Apple filing.
If you grab one of these, like the Buffalo Terra stations and plug it in, like it's supposedly not natively super Mac friendly. And apparently
it's like
good.
An Apple Share type.
Right.
Yeah,
I guess you just plug it into your Ethernet and there's a setup, a pretty basic setup.
So it just acts like a standalone server.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
And I just want
to... I'm so looking forward to 2 terabytes, though. I just want to say.
Yeah.
Having 2 terabytes on a network, like, has me a little giddy.
As someone who has 14 terabytes in the other room, you'll think that it's important until you have it, and then you'll use it all
up.
And
they're like closets. You will find a way to fill them up.
And we have. We're constantly like, okay, what are we going to throw away? How do we back up? And that's why I got into the raw drive stuff, is because we needed to pull stuff off of our...
When you and I were talking about this before the show and how you deal with stuff like all the media that you acquire, and I mean, I've talked about this a little bit on 43 Folders, where I have a Chronosync script that automatically syncs up my iTunes library to this kind of canonical Uber library, so I can kind of throw things out freely on my local drive and not worry that I'll lose the only copy I've got. But I just think increasingly that's going to be an issue that we've all got to deal with. Because if you want to stay portable as these devices keep getting smaller, how do you deal with the fact that it just seems like if somebody can come up with a Mac-friendly NAS.
And I think there's two things. I think that one is backing up, and one is these secondary things. I think another thing that I'm learning to do, and this is I'm learning to do this in all areas of my life, is just to realize that I'm never going to use that file again and just
throw it
away.
And we were talking about this also. the whole thing
of back up everything. Like here's the problem with photos, is that you used to shoot film photos and you'd only take a handful of photos, and then you'd only keep a certain number of prints of each one. And then those are the ones that you used. And now I have...
Yeah, money, no object. You can...
I have every crap photo I ever took, you know, sitting in a folder.
I've got 11 gigs of really crappy photos on my hard drive right now. It's ridiculous. The other thing, just to quickly mention in passing, is just this whole idea of getting some kind of a script that will run your backups for you automatically. Something that's
time
worth
machine.
Encouraging.
Time machine.
Have you used portable home directories in Tiger?
No.
Portable home directories in Tiger. Is it out?
Yeah, it came with Tiger. It was sort of supported.
I didn't
prior
know
to
that.
Tiger.
I thought that was in the next one.
Well, you have to have
the Leopard.
You have to have a Tiger server running.
Oh,
but basically the idea is it's kind of similar to on the Windows side, roaming profiles.
You can put it on a stick and stuff like that.
Well, the idea is that you have a network server that you log into. So instead of logging to the computer locally, you log into your home directory.
So you take like an Xserve or your spare G5 or whatever, and you just hook it to the network.
Right. Well, the idea of portable home directory, that's a home directory. The idea of a portable home directory is what was perfected in Tiger, so that you could sync your laptop and then unplug, and you could work on it offline. And then when you come back into your network, it syncs up and syncs all your files together. That's only an option if you have a directory... Open directory setup.
Right.
Or using Active Directory.
And you need
like
you need a CPU running that, right? So it's not just something you could do on a RAID.
Isn't
that or
rumored to be in or planned to be in Leopard? Isn't that, did I read something about that?
Well, that already works. You just have to have...
But I mean, without having a server.
Well, they were talking about even prior, before Tiger came out, they were talking about putting your home on an iPod and things like that. And you could do that. But what's really clever about actually having a server instead of a thumb drive or something like that, is that you can have a desktop. A lot of people have a desktop and a laptop.
Right.
And
you have
stuff on one and stuff on the other, and it's hard to synchronize things together. Mm-hmm. If you have portable home directories, you can have both.
Right. They're both the same, essentially.
Yeah, they're both talking to the same directory. Right. And so they both sync.
And the drive can be different. So like what happens when I have a 250-gig drive on my main computer and a 160-gig drive on my laptop?
Well, your home directory is a whatever size it is.
Okay.
So if it gets to be too big, then
that's the thing, though, is I think...
But if it's on the server, then you have...
But if I were going to design this, I would add some nuance to this. And I'm thinking of that. There's a great app out there whose name escapes me that lets you sync... You pick which browser is your primary browser, whether that's Safari, Firefox, Flock, what have you. You say, this is the daddy. And then it kind of cascades from there to all your other browsers. It makes sure that all your bookmarks sync correctly to that,
right.
And you identify those canonical ones. I would love it if somebody did what you're describing, but then said, okay, well, I have my canonical MacBook Pro, which is, or let's say, for the sake of argument, let's say it's a Mac Pro. Mm-hmm. Let's say you've got a tower that's your main drive. But so I have this MacBook Pro that I want to, as closely as possible, mirror all of my preferences, my application support, you know, all those important library type things. But then I'd also like to have just basically, like, let's say for me, something like my Quicksilver settings and my basic preferences that I could do, like, for example, put on a stick. I mean, it would be great to me if you could support multiple devices and say, like, you know what, don't move my iTunes over or don't move my downloads directory over. But, like, for each of these devices, because I mean,
is that a little bit of what the .Mac does?
Well, that's kind of what Time Machine would do. You can say, I take this local or network drive and copy my stuff to it every day or every week, whatever. But like what you're talking about, there's multiple types of sync. There's the .Mac type sync,
right.
Which is very handy for...
doesn't really work for me.
Well, I really like it for
my
bookmarks.
Files are too big.
Well, yeah. Part of the problem with the .Mac...
It's not good for moving around your files. That's kind of the
Well, it's also you've got to have the same user account. And understandably, you've got to have the same user account on another computer. But when I show up at MacBreak, I want to shoot the video show. I want to shoot a certain number of files from my home directory onto your hard drive.
Right.
So having a way to basically identify a la... Gosh, well, I was about to say backup.app and I stopped myself. But I'll ask some kind of program where you could go in and say, here are the directories that I want to have synced.
And one thing I experimented with for a long time that I just never really got working was the idea of having a portable drive be me. You know, and it's something that I really want, you know, that I'd love to have.
That would
get
cumbersome after a while, wouldn't it?
It would be, but it was just one of those things that
then
if it was easy.
And then somebody else could be you.
Yeah, someone else could be me, exactly.
It's your soul. USB 2 soul.
Did you see that someone actually, you know, there's this service. Who does the service that does the, you know, it's a security service where if your Mac is stolen.
Oh, it takes pictures?
It takes,
every
it uses
login.
The built-in. It uploads it, and a guy reported it, and he actually caught somebody. I mean, you know, you hear about it, and you think, oh, that's a great idea, and then you never hear anyone actually use it.
There's one that'll hack. I don't know exactly what it changes, a script or something that's before the login screen comes up, so that it'll actually record every login attempt.
Right. Yeah. It was an interesting thing where it actually took the photos. They found the guy.
Mac LoJack. Huh?
Yeah, Mac LoJack. Exactly. So now you just need GPS built into it, and then you just know exactly where he is.
Or big spikes that come out.
Well, that'd be mine. So now, has anyone used iLike?
I very quickly installed it, and then it was one of the things where I installed it, and then I took it off. It seems kind of like a Last.fm integrated iTunes thing. Is that right? It lets you have friends. It watches your tracks. It says you
might
like
this. It says discover new music, check out what your friends are listening to, browse the libraries of people with similar tastes, and get free MP3 downloads by new artists matched to your own musical tastes. Share and compare. You can share music libraries with your friends, browse and sample their most played songs, and compare your compatibility scores. And you can get iLike Sidebar for iTunes, which is auto-organize your iTunes library.
That's always there. That's what freaked me out. See, I didn't see anything in it.
They let you turn it off. You don't want people to necessarily...
Well, you know, it's a drawer. You guys can't see this out in podcast land, but it makes a drawer here that even when it's collapsed sticks out a little bit, which some part of my lizard brain really hated that. Yeah. And I get a lot of that functionality out of Last.fm. I mean, that's kind of where my friends are. Like, all of these things, like, do we really need another one of these networks out there that everybody's going to... Like, Last.fm...
Friendster for iTunes.
Kind of, yeah. But Last.fm, do you use Last.fm?
No.
Audio Scrobbler. It runs as a little, the interface for it is a menu. And it basically watches your iTunes and uploads that to a site. And it's kind of cool. So then you can do the kind of, you know, put on my website, here's what I'm listening to. But it also, you can have friends. And so you can, the really neat part is you can then have a streaming radio of your friends' tracks. So Last.fm goes out there and cuts deals with all these companies so that they can get access to the songs. And you can listen to a streaming version of what your friends are listening to. Hmm. It's pretty cool, your little neighborhood.
This is a little like what I was talking about in the other show where I was talking what I wanted to have with this.
And we're back to the playlist.
Cross section and I'm not gonna talk about it. I'm just saying, no, not the playlist, but the idea of, maybe we were talking about it in TWIM. I get a little... cross.
This is why we need the whiteboard.
Yeah, exactly. What did I talk about in the last TWIM? About the idea of being able to watch, I think it was in TWIM we were talking about it, where I want to be able to say, show me everybody with 80%, a library that's 80% like mine, or 40% like mine, or 50% like mine, and then just play me the music that is, if more than 20 or 30% of the people have this song, show me what that song is. And so it's not just a handful of people. It could be hundreds. It could be thousands. But it's just showing me where when it reaches over some spike that I've set up, it shows me what that is and allows it kind of creates that 6 degrees of separation where suddenly you're just the stuff you're interested in is fine. And it's not just for music. It'd be for news whatever you want.
Last FM recently, I don't know if they recently added this. I noticed it recently, is this ability to click on any of your friends and it will tell you how close your DNA is with that person. So for any of the people that are on your little friends list, it'll say that your musical taste is very much like this person or not very much like, and here's the artist that you have in common.
And your family came from Nigeria.
That's right.
Have you guys?
That's right. And I like your hair like that. Hey, it looks like you look
pretty. Looks like you stole your whole friend's library. We're automatically reporting you.
I'm in your iTunes.
So now, Dan, you wrote a long article recently about how the iPhone could change could shake up the industry.
Yeah. Well, I'd prior to that written about the iPhone as something that Apple, what they wouldn't be doing, and right. So. Then I conversely wrote about the other side, too, because I like to make sure I'm covering every base.
Mm-hmm.
But I wrote about inside Apple's iPhone, not so much that it's going to even be called the iPhone, but what was interesting is what Apple can do in the service provider realm, what they can offer. Because a lot of people think about what Apple could offer in a phone. Every phone that I've ever had is so frustrating, the interface and things like that.
Here's the thing: this segment of the show is dedicated to Scott Bourne. I think this is why Scott's so excited about it, and why I'm excited about it. I have to admit, my trio is slowly falling apart. Like it's just slowly dying. And there's all kinds of little problems with it right now. Yeah. And so I'm limping along with this trio, hoping that I can get through whenever Apple releases the iPhone. And I think that what you just said touched upon why so many people are excited about it is that the interfaces for just about every phone ever designed are completely useless.
And then in addition to just the kind of things that seem like they should have been fixed previously, there's also the whole phone industry and how it's really just set up in kind of a non-consumer oriented way. So when
it's kind of a serfdom. I like to think of it as serfdom.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, there's no choice because the people that are creating phones like Motorola and all the different manufacturers and including the Trio, they can put features on the phone that consumers would benefit from, but the service providers don't always want those features to even work. And some, like Verizon, turn them off,
right?
Like Bluetooth, because they want people to use their phones, to use their network.
The way they say.
Right. As much as possible.
Right.
And so they invent features like text messaging. I mean, that's not a feature. That's using your phone. But they've set it up so you can charge you per
message. Which is fascinating because in the United States, text messaging costs more than ends up costing a lot extra over your voice, your usage of voice. Whereas you go to Africa and text messaging is much cheaper than using the phone. And everybody uses text messaging because it's too expensive.
For banking, right? Isn't that like a big way people do their banking in Africa?
They do everything.
I think Africa does this banking through emails, according to my...
I saw that on Harper's. There's a Harper's Index thing about that.
You can text
message. Oh, is that you're getting a lot of from Nigeria?
Yeah.
You can use text messaging just to actually get gas, in Zimbabwe, because there's all this stuff about buying diesel there.
So there's text messaging, right. And there's like the photo mail thing where they want you to take photos with your camera phone and
but they're interested in features that to which they can associate some kind of a service that's going to cost.
So yeah, it's using their network and that's the whole purpose of doing it. So the hardware makers are kind of constrained by they can't directly sell to consumers because phones aren't sold as phones that people buy and then
they're accessories to your service.
Right, they're subsidized by the service. Mm-hmm. So you like the Trio phone that costs $600 or $700 is $50 if you get service.
Right.
So obviously that $500 is coming out of you're paying that through your service. So Apple has the opportunity that a lot of other manufacturers don't have. I mean, no manufacturers really have retail stores.
Right.
And kind of a relationship with customers where Apple has customers that buy pretty much anything they put out. And So just their ability to say, here's a $400 device, and people would be, oh, yeah, I'll buy that.
Right.
Where that doesn't happen in the cell phone industry. People looking at a phone, they want, they kind of have this expectation of it being free. And that devalues the perceived value of the phone.
Right.
People think of phones as just being kind of like a free accessory that they get with their service. So that that would give Apple the opportunity to really kind of turn things around. And
now, why would the phone companies go along with this?
Because Apple's selling service. And I don't know as much about it in the United States, but in other countries, there's a push behind what they call the mobile virtual network operator. It's kind of similar to when the phone company was, when the regular phone company was busted up, and you can't choose your, you couldn't initially choose your local service provider. You just had a Ma Bell of what, whoever it was for your area, but you gave you the choice of long distance service.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of what Apple's doing is, or what they have the potential to do is come in and say, here's a way to choose.
And you have a phone, you can use singular or you can use. Now, do you think that the real question is, like, for instance, will the phone support CDMA, which would be, that's Verizon's. If, it,
right.
if they don't support the CDMA, then you're not going to have a Verizon iPhone.
Well, Verizon is one of my least favorite companies. I hope they're not sponsoring your podcast.
They're not. They're not. I happen to use Verizon because it's the only one that works in my office. Our office is like a Faraday cage. And so Verizon happens to work here, and that's why we use it. And also, it doesn't conflict with audio signals. For those of you who are into podcasts, GSM is like your is the devil.
Hmm.
Because if even if you silence your phone, you'll hear this little click, 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 click. Anytime the GSM phone wants to talk to the network, you'll hear it on these audio cables. And CDMA, one of the reasons I use Verizon is because CDMA doesn't do that. It's more secure. That's why it's military spec.
Hmm.
So anyway,
I think it's a military spec because the military is behind Qualcomm. It's an American company, whereas GSM is
possibly
a EU company.
It's actually more secure from what I understand though.
All of the United States or all of the world is GSM. Or GSM, except for Iraq. We rebuilt it in our own image.
Well, but it's only Verizon, I think, because I think that T-Mobile, Singular are all GSM providers. I don't think anybody else. I think Verizon's the only one that does CDMA that I know of.
It's apparently big in South America as well.
Is it? Yeah. So this could really change it. I think that it seems that this is really a providers working with Apple is more out of fear of if one provider doesn't, if you're left out of it, it could be very painful. Would you agree?
Well, we don't know yet. I mean, it would certainly be in Apple's best interest to have one phone.
What I'm saying is that if Apple makes a phone that works on a series of different providers,
right.
If you're the provider that they're not working with, it could be a painful experience for you, given that you'd lose a lot of service.
Right, and that's what the providers do now. They get one of the new phones that's coming out, like when the Trio first came out, or when
they want it first.
Yeah, they get an exclusive deal with it, so anybody that wants that phone will have to switch to them.
Right.
So Apple would have some pull there and saying, here's a popular phone. Are you going to support it or not?
Right.
But I don't know. I kind of like the idea of GSM just because of the smart card idea that. I mean, it's common in Europe that you get a phone,
and then you get whatever.
Yeah, you can buy a smart card off the shelf,
right?
And use it
because even now the phones that are here now that have GSM don't let you. You can't just switch the card out, right?
I kind of think you can, but the options for getting cards is
it's not just go buy a card.
It's not common, right?
Anyway, that ends our iPhone thing. Unless Merlin has a.
No, I'm good.
Merlin loves talking about the iPhone. It's all he talks about off the show, and for some reason he won't really discuss it.
It's something
on the show.
That I feel like I'm so confused. Close to, and I it takes up so much of my thought in the day that I guess I feel like I don't want to push that on people.
Apple is number two in the tech hot growth according to Business Week.
USA.
Google's number one, I think. I think that's what they.
Alex, what does that mean?
It means that Business Week made an arbitrary list, and Apple came in number two.
What's the metric, though?
I don't know what the metric is. My damn. I mean,
is it a unitless number? What is it?
My computer won't come up right now. So I'm I was gonna talk about it here, and then my bandwidth went to zero. I think a lot of it has to do with the hot tech growth ranking, and I'm not sure exactly what they're. I think a lot of it has to do with percentage growth. For instance, Google over the last 12 months grew 77%. So that's a that's not bad.
That's in terms of number of employees.
That's a revenue.
Wow.
You know, Google is approaching $10 billion in revenues, with growth of over in the past 12 months, still at a torrid. That's what they said. I didn't say it. Torrid.
How much of that is
77%?
How much of that is AdWords, AdSense, ads?
I have no idea.
But it's a lot.
Yeah. And Apple grew 39% sales. That's not bad. To 19.3 billion.
Market cap doubled. I was researching when I was doing that iPhone story, and I was looking up stocks, and from the high point in 2000, mm-hmm. most tech companies have not really recovered to where they were. Apple is triple what they were at the height of the dot-com.
It's really affected my Marketocracy ranking.
Wow.
So I don't actually own any stock. I mentioned it in one show before that I had Apple stock, and I didn't make it clear that I have virtual Apple stock. I don't have real Apple stock. I just play the market.
It's like the financial version of a make-believe girlfriend.
It is. It's like Dream Teams. Marketocracy is like that. So I have this. I have my Apple, my Alex's Media Fund, and I'm crushing the market in Apple.
That's good. Well, congratulations.
I just thought I'd let you know. That's another Merlin's going. If he goes down one more rat hole, I'm gonna kill him. So Apple is doing pretty well. We're gonna see how that.
They're selling some units. They're moving some.
Well, here's the thing: is that what I think is amazing is when you see this. They're talking about. You see Apple's growth, and then you still see these analysts that come up and say Apple should make OS X available to all PCs. They're not doing very well on their hardware sales. Their hardware sales have never been actually better than they are right now. But they're constantly, you know, these analysts are really hooked on the idea. And Vista, by the way, is, you know, according to some, writing its own suicide note.
And that's what they say.
Well, it's interesting that some of the same analysts say that Apple should give away OS X to the PCs. And either at the same time or slightly before that, they were saying that Apple should turn around and make Windows PCs.
Merlin got him on Nike Plus.
I just want to talk about something fun. All this inside, you're scaring all the cute girls away with all this inside baseball stuff.
I had something fun here. I had Porn Dominates video.
We got Nike Plus. We got Porn Dominates media.
We're gonna finish it all up with some fun.
Yeah, you wanna?
Why don't you finish up?
I just thought this was.
You got
really,
a Nike Plus.
I got a Nike Plus, and I just wanted to talk.
Are you actually using it? Do you run?
You're always talking about your damn workouts and how you're always with the workouts and
which is pretty funny because Merlin's in much better shape than I am.
I don't know if you guys can see this, but I am ripped right now. He's shirtless, ripped
and I can put
and I have glistening man nipples.
I can put a mug of beer on my belly.
That's true. No, I actually have a 9-pack. It's. I have an extremely well-developed lower abdomen. Get sliced cheese on it.
So you got this Nike. You got this.
Yeah, this came
this
through.
This is the thing that goes in your shoe?
This
is the thing that goes in your shoe?
This is the thing that goes in your shoe. And I just thought I'd mention it to you because I think it's something you might be actually kind of into looking at.
If I put it on and I went to the gym, it would tell me that I went like 4 feet.
You're at the gym.
You went 4 feet.
This is provided through, the advertising on my site is handled by my friends over at Federated Media, and they, just in terms of disclosure, this is some stuff that Nike has sent to some of the publishers to look at. So they sent some shoes and an iPod and a little sensor thing, the iPod Nike pack to try out, and it's really fun. It's so fun.
Now, does it keep a map of where you went?
No, it doesn't. Okay, so this is the one thing that there are some stuff out. There's stuff out there that, and if you have Windows, apparently you have a lot more options for things like using GPS, where it will actually like track where you went. You know, to go straight to the Karmasuck part, I do wish that there was an all-in-one unit that would handle all of the things the different gadgets handle. I wish there was something that would handle GPS plus heart rate plus pedometer. Plus, you know, the burn and all that stuff and the playlist and all that kind of stuff all in one place. That works on a Mac. I don't know if that exists. But what they have put together is a pretty cool little package.
Right.
And I've only played with it just a little bit. I'm somebody who is advancing in years. And I've decided that I want to start walking and running more. And so, like a lot of people, I'm much more inclined to do something if there's a geeky tech factor associated with it. But no, I just thought I'd mention it because it's something you might want to look at too. It's a lot of fun to set up. You can go ahead and you can calibrate it to the way that you walk. You say, okay, well, I'm going to walk a quarter of a mile, and it will, you know, then calibrate it to whatever.
Does it tell you
my
You've now walked a quarter of a mile.
This is the part that's neat. The part that I was really skeptical about was thinking, okay, well, there's probably going to be some kind of Victoria robot voice, you know, that's going to pop in occasionally. But it's totally laid back. You know, it plays a song, and then it occasionally will bring the volume down to say, you know, you're this far into your run, you've got this much left to go. I like it pretty well. I mean, I think it's got a lot of room to improve in order to bring in things like, you know, like right now I look like a freaking Cylon if I have all of the stuff that I want. Like I would love to track what a pedometer says I did in terms of distance and burn, what, you know, a heart monitor says I did in terms of tracking that stuff, as well as the, you know, the GPS stuff of where did I go. And so, you know, nobody wants to run around with, like, you know, four devices on them. So I think there's still an opportunity here.
I wonder if the wireless that the Nike Plus uses could work with more than one device, or if it has the capacity to do that.
Oh, I see what you're saying. That
if it could become almost like a hub.
Where it could, if you had other, so your pedometer could send information to the iPod as well.
Yeah, if it could receive them both.
There's something about using this that makes it feel a little bit like an interesting experiment. You know, the fact that right now, you know, you go to a
site. But the
question
is, will that be enough to sustain you 6 months into it?
That's right. And that's a really good question. Or more importantly, for your inside baseball kind of crap, is this the kind of relationship that Apple is going to start having with outside companies? Because, I don't know, it seems like it benefits on the face of it.
Yeah.
Sorry?
It's pretty innovative.
It is. But on the face of it, it seems like it probably benefits, pound for pound, benefits Nike more than it benefits Apple. Because you're encouraged to kind of buy these shoes.
Does anyone
But when you buy all the Nike stuff, then it's like, oh, now I have to buy the
Well, they each get something out of it, right? I mean, in my understanding of why iTunes is a quote-unquote good thing for Apple, it's because, you know, it gets you coming back to the Apple place, you're using an Apple device. You know, and it becomes this lifestyle. Your iPod increasingly is becoming this lifestyle hub in some ways, right?
Well, I'd like it to become that. It doesn't do
enough. I think that's what it's trying to do.
And that's what I think that maybe we see with an iPhone or something, or a new, you know, iPod.
But it's,
well, you know, all these devices have the same dock connector. That's the cool thing.
Does anyone make a GPS one for the iPod?
There's one. You guys talk about something else and I'll find it. There was a thread on Metafilter in my research about this where they talked about the difference between I can't do two things at once. About comparing somebody saying, should I buy a Nike Plus versus should I buy this GPS that I'm now forgetting? And the GPS one, which I'll look up, looks really cool. It basically will track wherever you go, but it looks like it's mostly PC.
But, you know, if you're running, don't you know where you've been?
Yes, but I think what the Nike Plus wants to be is, I mean, it's funny because, you know, anytime you get a new Apple product,
it's tracking how far you go, right? I mean, it's tracking.
It is.
Oh
yeah. So if you haven't seen what it does, the basic functionality is that using your footfall, it tells you how far and how fast you run. So it tracks as you're doing it. It's useful in the sense that it says, okay, here's your, you know, you're running a this minute mile or what have you. And then when you get home, it plugs into this website where it tracks all your runs for you and expresses it as a graph.
The graph part that I like.
The graph part's neat.
I think that's very important.
I like the power song thing where you push a button and it, like,
goes straight to your favorite Ron song or whatever. Yeah, the rocker. It's interesting though because...
I have that power song thing. It's called the Linkin Park CD.
But I the reason I mention here is because, first of all, it is kind of cool, and I was excited to get it and play with it. And but I think it is interesting to think about what kinds of relationships like this might be intriguing to Apple and
especially
to its,
I think,
consumers.
That once it starts being able to communicate with a lot more devices, if they had Wi-Fi, if they had Bluetooth,
that's exactly right.
You could really have a lot more fun than just the connector. The connector is fine, but I don't want to have a lot of connectors and I don't want to have a lot of stuff. What I want my iPod to do is be able to Bluetooth to a whole slew of different things. And maybe that's one connector with a Bluetooth, and then it just
We should get my friend Adam Greenfield in here to talk about this. He's a big ubiquitous computing guy, and I think what we're looking at here is the beginning of interesting consumer you become to me. Because the promise of this is that with the right kind of dongle hooked up to something as innocuous as your iPod, you start getting to do some really interesting things based on the data that it can send and transmit. I mean, obviously, we were all excited about the Zune when we heard that it was going to have quote unquote wireless. And then, of course, the version of wireless that you get is...
It came out and it was crap.
It makes you sad. But I don't know. I mean, as long as we're talking about all this speculative stuff, I just think that idea and having, getting, so, you know, this is a wonderfully packaged Apple-centric product, right? You get this thing, you take it apart, you plug it in, it just works. You literally plug it in and start walking, and it was pretty accurate. When I did my test walk to calibrate it, the quarter mile that I walked, it was 0.24 miles. So it, out of the box, it was pretty accurate. But I just think it's really intriguing to think about, you know, when you bring in something, some of this wireless stuff. And I don't know what it is. I mean, there's obviously the fanciful stuff, like it could be your BART card, right? It could be this way of storing a point.
You could go buy
a BART card, actually.
It wouldn't fit.
No, you just roll it over. You have to have that one where you
see,
roll it
funny,
over.
See, that's funny, Dan. That's funny. But some way, or it could be, like, you know, the key fob type activities. Yeah. But and as to why you would want that GPS, well, I think what they're trying to get at with the specific product is this getting you more involved in your music as part of your workout, and therefore bringing you kind of emotionally closer to your relationship with iTunes. And it's very, like, you do stuff, like it shows you, when it shows you the run you did, it tells you what song, what playlist you were listening to. And so I think you're really encouraged.
There's a whole section of playlists that are all Nike Blast oriented.
I bought one. Yeah, I bought the Crystal Method one.
I'd like to mix the Crystal Method one with the Linkin Park and a little.
I don't know.
Cures up a heart attack.
Guys our age should be listening to something a little more staid.
What should we be listening to? The Cure? So, how old are you?
I am Dan? 33.
Okay, Dan's, wow. Dan's the young in the. But I'm noticing
we're close to the same age. You're a little younger than me.
I'm 36.
36.
Yes. So I'm not that.
Once again, I'm the oldest one in the room.
I just want to say I felt very old when I was in the Oakland airport and they were playing a Muzak version of the Split Ends.
What?
They were playing Muzak.
I got you.
No, it wasn't.
Six
Months in a Leaky Boat. Split Ends, Muzak, and I literally, my lower back just started hurting. I mean, it was just, there was pain showing up. I'm going, I can't believe that, I can't believe I can still remember all the words. Anyway, so porn still dominates video downloads. 60% of all the downloads out there in the third quarter were adult film content. 20% was TV show content. This is according to Forbes, so it must be true. And, and 5% was the mainstream movie content.
Paid downloads? What kind of downloads?
Paid downloads.
Does this include...
You know, they don't really keep track of that. What they got into of paid downloads, they said 62% was TV content, 24% was music content, 6% was mainstream content, and they don't really figure out that doesn't really add up to 100%, but that we won't get into that. But 90% of all paid downloads, non-porn, I assume, was from Apple computers, iTunes store.
Yikes.
So people are buying it. They're buying it from Apple.
I'm buying the hell out of it.
I buy a lot of stuff from Apple. It's so funny when it seemed expensive when I first started, and now I don't think about it. I'm making a mix. I was making a mix that I wanted to make of just this. I decided I got into this, like, I went down this rabbit hole. I know you'd never think that I'd go down a rabbit hole.
You?
Me. I went down a musical rabbit hole.
I don't see it.
And I decided that I wanted all these songs. And I just went up to iTunes and just went click 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 click. And I bought, like, you know, 8 songs.
Why I think Apple should start selling wine, because I'm pretty sure that their alcohol definitely has a component in this. My finger gets a lot more loose around 10 or 11.
Yeah.
Cure box set. Yeah. Sounds great.
What was I thinking?
It's only $40.
Yeah. So, but I do think that it is something that culturally, and I think this is what the music industry has to pay attention to and what the movie industry has to pay attention to, is that culturally it becomes easier and easier for some of us to actually buy things.
I have an observation, and I don't know. I'm curious if this, and I'll reveal just a little bit about myself here. I have a kind of ad hoc cascade of media location that I will go through, and iTunes definitely has a place in that. If there's ways that I can get media in less costly ways, that mm-hmm. will sometimes be the first place that I will look. Mm-hmm. And if it's not there, I'll go to certain other means and so on and so on. But I got to tell you, a lot of the times I end up at the iTunes store and I end up putting a quarter in the meter. No question about it. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean that obviously that means that I don't want to spend money if I don't have to, maybe. But what it also says to me, it's a point I just cannot get away from, which is that it's a very healthy habit for media companies to get us into the habit of getting stuff off the internet.
Well, and I find that for me,
I wouldn't be on iTunes. All I'm saying, I guess the point that I'm trying to make that might open me to litigation is that I don't think I would be such an enthusiastic iTunes buyer if I didn't first have this legacy of somebody who had spent 5 years finding it through other means.
Right.
I think that completely trained me to be somebody who learned to think about getting media in terms of instant gratification.
Yeah.
And finding a way to put a cash register on that.
Right. And I have to admit, I go to iTunes first because I just don't want to bother. I go straight to iTunes.
You know what?
I'll tell you something. If I don't find the song on iTunes, you know, I'm not going to the record store to find it. You know, that's the thing. Now I'll start looking around.
If it didn't have the DRM, I would probably be buying three times as much. I have no problem with the price at all. I got to tell you, it drives me a little bit
crazy.
The
DRM cuts my consumption down probably to one fifth of what it would normally be.
And as I get more devices in my life, and as hard drives crash and all that stuff, I just don't want to have to deal with that. But I guess I just think that is a habit that's been healthy.
DRM doesn't have an effect on whether you'd lose your files if it's crashed or not.
If you lose the copy you've downloaded, you don't get to download it again from the iTunes store.
Well, actually,
unless you're Leo and you can...
Well, first of all, yes, you can, actually. You just give them a hard luck story and they do...
Have you done that?
Mm-hmm.
Really? Leo says he did that, too.
Yeah.
Did you use Leo's name to do that?
No. No, they probably wouldn't believe me. But yeah, if you lose your files, you just call and cry until they let you download it, and they tell you that you can't probably ever do it for another year, and then 6 months later, you could do it again. But, I mean, obviously the reason why...
But that's not official.
Well, it's...
They don't want everybody doing
practice.
That.
The reason they don't want everyone to do it is because they've sold 2 billion tracks.
Because the labels would lose their...
Or a billion and a half tracks, whatever. Can you imagine if Apple just had to have the reserve to allow everyone to download their tracks?
Do they have to pay again when you download
it? So we have theories about this. We had a whole segment about this.
I don't think it would be...
Because we were saying, Alex and I and the rest of us were saying that we think it would be really smart for them to basically hold this in perpetuity, a la the MP3 locker back in the day, where you can come back and from any licensed Mac, I don't know what the terminology is, but you should be able to download. If I'm in a hotel room I should be able to re-download my stuff.
But if you think about the problem, they've sold a billion and a half tracks.
Right.
The hardware infrastructure to be prepared to re-download those billion and a half tracks at any given point, that's a lot of... I think Apple, they're shipping a lot of data. And they have their systems tuned to the point where they don't have... I mean, it doesn't make sense to have a lot of excess capacity just sitting around doing nothing. So if they allowed anyone to just download anything at any point in the future, they would have to maintain the capacity to do that or face surges and...
I just keep thinking about that. Anything... They say that, for example, with gift cards, you know, there's a thing on NPR today about gift cards and what a boon gift cards have been for all these different... stores, because they said one of the things is, what do they call it, Lyft, the amount that, I forget what the term they use is, but people, if you give somebody a gift card, they tend to come in and spend 50% on top of whatever the value the gift card was. And this is the whole reason why I mentioned before the girl I knew who worked at the Limited, and they made deliberately crappy clothes so that people would return them and then buy more, and you always, they had this very loop.
I just want to say that the pair of pants that I'm wearing today is too big.
From the Limited?
No, I bought them from the Gap.
Palazzo pants?
No, I bought the pants and I just they're just a little too big. I got them a slightly size bigger, but then they should have gotten them a size smaller and
29 waist.
And so I decided that right. One day it was that. So when I was 12, I went into the Gap today to buy to return the pants, and I bought four other pairs of pants.
Precisely. And so, yes, you're absolutely right. I think so the theory that we had was that Apple would love to be able to do that, but that the labels that they've probably, we're assuming, do you have any information on this? We're assuming that they've got to pay the label every time something gets downloaded.
How would the labels know if Apple's allowing people to download stuff from their
spyware?
Auditing.
Oh,
spyware.
Auditing.
They don't use Windows.
I'm sure they...
I.O. Yeah.
And they may have some kind of agreement with the record companies that this is within reason that they let people download it, you know, if they...
Right, but I mean, clearly Apple would have a separate bucket of things they've given away for free and things that they've downloaded twice and things they've actually sold.
I just think anytime you get people, it's just back. This is there's a reason I'm not in the corner office. I don't have the business acumen, but it just seems to me anytime you get people coming to your site and doing stuff and interacting, you know, to become your lifestyle hub. You know what I mean?
And I think having that's a major genius part of having the iTunes store integrated right into iTunes, so it's right there. And obviously they're working that by the thing they just introduced, just a year ago. Suggesting other songs that when you play a song, the little mini store comes up and says, hey, go to our store and buy some more stuff.
I don't do that. Do you actually use that?
I turn mine off. I thought it was freaking me out.
But I mean, that's the point. I mean, that's why it's there. It's like you're saying to get you back in the store.
Yes. Yeah. I just don't. I'm not willing to. When I buy stuff from iTunes, I know I want it. It's very rare for me to experiment.
Yeah, iTunes. I don't browse very often.
Yeah.
We talked a little bit before the show, just we were talking about, when we were mentioning your porn video story, just this kind of like the lessons that you can learn, though, from just the whole idea of the way most...
Well, I mean, most people will tell you, and I, to be honest with you, I don't know how the whole business end of porn works, but most people will tell you, most analysts will tell you that if you want to see someone who's done an organization or a group of organizations that have figured out how to make money with content, mm-hmm. and figured out how to drive people towards paying for it, porn is they're the best in the world at what they do. You know,
that's where the money is. The money drives the innovation.
Thing, I mean, to a certain extent, every company understands their audience. But it just seems to me that there aren't many industries that understand their audience, the core interests of their audience, better than the people who are selling porn.
They're not only producers; they're customers.
but I mean, understanding. But you know, that's...
But that's because of the built-in demand that's there. I mean, people.
But there's built-in demand for content. Porn is one type of content, but there's built-in demand for all kinds of content.
It's
got to
be scarcity.
Compelling.
I mean, it's not available everywhere. You know, it's like alcohol in states outside of ours, where you have to go to a specific store to get alcohol.
Oh,
that's you have to go there to get
North
it.
North Carolina,
Pittsburgh,
so they can change how the market works.
But I think the more that you can get that idea in your head, though, of being able to service people, you know, when they want it.
Well, and figure out how do you give them a little bit and then a little bit more and then a little bit more and then say, okay, now if you want more, you're going to have to pay for it now. Right. And that's something that, I'll be honest with you, that's what we do with DV Garage. That's what we did for a long time. I'd show up on Tech TV and I'd say, I'd just show something for free. It's really easy to go. And I'd say, you know what? If you want to see more of this, this is the 7-minute version. If you want to see the 20-minute version, go to dvgarage.com. And somewhere between 1,000 and 2,000 people a week would go to dvgarage.com and they'd download that video and they'd leave me their email. And then when I released the product, I'd say, hey, oh, by the way, you know, to the now 50 to 80,000 people, depending on what time of the year, by the way, I released the Photoshop product.
Yeah.
You know, That's all I did.
But you've got to put enough of a sample outside the paywall that people can make an informed decision about whether it's something that they want. That's why I like, for example, I think traditionally, if somebody had made the iTunes store, say whatever, you know, 5 years ago, they probably would have had a low quality full download track of one song from each album. You know what I mean? I love the idea that you can go in on iTunes and listen to 30 seconds. You know,
I still think the winning formula to me is still you can download anything you want at 96-bit, and 256-bit is 99 cents.
Ah.
So you have the subscription model. I'll pay, you know, you pay $20 a month to Apple and you get 96-bit of all you want. If you want to keep that song forever, you pay a buck for a 256-bit one, which is higher than, you know, so you spread that out. So the 128 is kind of this, I think that 128 is kind of this evil middle, you know, where it's really not that great. And that's the other reason I don't buy stuff. I like to buy CDs if I really want it.
It doesn't sound that good. It's not that small.
Yeah. So let me pay. If I'm paying for something, I'll pay for a 256 download, or a 192 download would be considerably better than the 128. So I'll pay for that, and then let me pay you $20 a month to have 96-bit all I want. So I can sit there and play and listen to playlists and listen to have my workout mix.
It's not the Zune-like. It's not the Zune-like approach.
It's a cross-section of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it is. I think I have to admit I'm actually looking at going to buy an MP3 player that lets me play with some of the other services, because I kind of want the subscription model. I kind of want to go, you know, I feel like this for a workout, and I'm going to go through 500,000 songs, and I'm just going to fill it up. I don't necessarily want to buy all that stuff. I don't want to own it all. I just want to have it for the next 3 weeks, you know, and then I'm going to get tired and move to another workout mix, you know. And so I think that Apple needs to, because I think people didn't like it at first, but I think people are starting to warm to it. The longer these subscription models are out there, they're starting to realize that they don't, they may not actually want to own everything.
But the subscription models aren't working.
They're not working as well, not
making money, you mean?
They're not working as well, but Apple had a huge head start, and Apple has a huge closed system. So there's a lot of things that make the Apple solution work.
Well, I think head starts are overrated. I mean, there's something to a head start, but we've had Play for Sure since 2004, and it's dramatically failed over the last 3 years. And there just isn't a huge market for. I mean, there's people who talk about it, and yeah, it sounds kind of good, but there's other kind of angles to it that. To really do Play for Sure in a mobile device, you have to do what Microsoft did and put all the DRM in the device. So the device is doing all this work and making sure that, oh, it's the end of the month, you can't listen to this anymore and shut you off. You can't do that on the iPod. It doesn't have the technology to do that.
Right.
It's just simple advice. It also makes the iPod a simpler device. And so it's not like a, you know, A or B. It's kind of like a, you know, do you want to do this kind of simple
well, but
market
I think
that works in one way.
I mean, to be honest with you, with the subscription thing at 96-bit, you could probably just let people have them. I mean, if you really like the song, you're going to buy it. You know, at 96-bit, or you could decide maybe it's 64-bit. You know, that would be the situation. So, end of show. Do you have a pick?
I got a pick that I am extremely excited about. I occasionally write things. I have occasion to write things. And I was told about this, actually, oddly enough, by a guy that was interviewing me for an article for the Financial Times. And every time I end up getting interviewed by another Mac geek, we spend the same amount of time that we had during the interview talking shop afterward. And this guy told me about a fantastic application called Scrivener. And
Scrivener?
S-C-R-I-V-E-N-E-R, which I'm going to go hit on the Google right now. I think it's Literature and Latte is the name of the site. Yeah, literatureandlatte.com. Scrivener is a writing app that pulls together a lot of the stuff that you normally have to go to a few different apps for. It's one of the things I love about it. It's very – so when you're building sections inside of Scrivener, and that could be chapters, it could be paragraphs, it could be whatever, each one of these can be their own little atomic sub-document. And each little document inside of there gets its own index card with its own synopsis. All the index cards can be moved around on a cork board, and all of those sections stay associated with that index card and that synopsis. Mm-hmm. Index cards can have sub-index cards and so on. So anyway, it's this very intuitive way to capture – like if you're like me and you sometimes like to start with a brain dump and then move everything around and then figure out what that means, you're actually doing the writing as you're doing the brainstorming, because anything that you've got now becomes the basis for whatever you want to write. There's a ton of stuff to go into with this app, so I won't go all the way through it, but it does include a really nice full screen mode. It can output to a variety of different formats. I love the fact that you can, for example, write in any kind of typeface and formatting style that you like, and whatever style you choose for output is completely separate. So it's a very smart kind of, I don't want to say almost object-oriented way to write. And whatever your style of writing is, Scrivener will accommodate the way that you think about the process. You're not hemmed into one way of doing that. So if you've been using, for example, I don't want to say you don't need DevonThink or you don't need Yojimbo, but if you've been thinking in a way where you want to pull lots of scraps of stuff in, photographs, web pages, you can do all that inside of here, move it all around as file cards, and then turn it into a draft.
Okay, I'm going to check that out.
Literatureandlatte.com.
Sounds good. How much is it?
I don't think it's for sale yet. This developer seems really cool.
It's like an open beta?
It's a demo that runs into January. I saw somewhere what the cost was, and it's escaping me now. But the developer is very responsive to suggestions. It has a very lively forum associated with it, lots of good tips and tricks. And it's another – like so many of the apps that I love, it doesn't reveal itself to you in the first 5 minutes. It takes a little bit of time to noodle around with it. But and finally, unlike a lot of applications that seem initially whizzy, I don't think this is a pure time sink. It isn't just a place to fiddle. And if you're like me and you have distraction problems and need the big Nerf football-sized Ritalin, that's a good thing.
Do you have one, Dan?
No, I wasn't aware that I could pick something.
What's your killer app, Dan?
What's your favorite app?
What is my killer app?
Actually, just like where were you? Like
we surprised Dan. Just so you know, I asked Dan late last week.
It's a virtual blanket party.
Yeah, we get it. Come on over here, you know, and he came over, and then we were like, oh, by the way, you have to tell everyone what you love, and you have to come up with one real good one. And
so what's an app that you're excited about?
Let's see. Well, something that I've been using a lot lately, just as a very simple app, is called MasterPlaceIt. I was looking around for it, I couldn't find it, and I stumbled across it, and it was like, did exactly what it does. It lets you kind of brainlessly pick out either within a file or a series of files. You can replace, find and replace either on the names of items or contents or anything like that. And I use that a lot.
Mass Replace It is at hexmonkeysoftware.com. Alex, do you have a pick?
The one, I think we've gotten to the end of my pick because I'm not a very interesting Mac user. You know, I use like four
apps. Also, everything you use costs $799.
I know. I mean, I'm trying to think of something that was like, you know, we were laughing. You know, everything that Merlin has is either free or shareware, and everything that Alex has is like
proprietary video software, four figures.
Yeah, exactly. So, so the thing that I am playing with that we talked about a little bit earlier in the show that I'm interested in is the Zudio. You know, this new Azurius thing that I've been playing with. So, it is the ability. It's you know, the BBC is going to be putting content onto it. It is it uses the BitTorrent backend, the peer-to-peer backend, to let you move files around and download these big HD files. Democracy also does it. We've already talked about Democracy in the past. The Zudio is brand new. It's still in beta. It's a little funky. I wouldn't say that it's has the interface that I like as much as Democracy, but I also find I'm afraid of Democracy because it really does everything so automatically that sometimes I fill up my hard drive and shut down the system.
Democracy will fill your hard drive real fast.
Really fast.
And you subscribe to something, you know, again.
And suddenly, like, boom. Yeah. You're
having a little bit of eye wine and you start subscribing to lots of stuff.
Yeah. So anyway, Zudio is something that's worth checking out. I think that it'd be fun to have a lot of people up there playing with it and, you know, let us know what you think. As always, let us know what you think at twit.tv in the MacBreak Weekly section. We've got some great discussions building there. A lot of people have been participating, especially those who actually made it through the entire show, which this show is
really, this is a long-ass show.
I don't know how it got so long.
Can we put in a plug for our friend Dustin, who has been keeping a record of all the applications that we talk about on this
show? Dustin is the man.
Dustin is the man. I don't know how to pronounce this. Is it Dasutin? Dasutin.com. And this young gentleman is doing a wonderful, helpful thing for us, which is every time we talk about these apps at the end of the show, he provides links. You can go all the way back to episode 6 and talking about Little Snitch. Ah, oh, the good old days. Episode 6 through 20, they're all here. And going forward, he's going to keep doing this. So dasutin.com. And you can go in and see these apps that we talk about every time. And we really appreciate him doing that for us.
And we really appreciate it. It really does make a difference, even though we don't respond to everything that people put up in the twit.tv and in the MacBreak Weekly section. It really does make a difference. I read everything that goes in there. And I really take it as a you know, oh, we should think about doing this. We should think about doing that. So I'm definitely come up and let us know what you think. And hopefully we'll see a lot of you guys when we in a couple weeks. We've only got one more week. I think next week will be mostly us prepping and getting ready for the big Mac world. I think it's going to be, you know, who knows? I think it could be one of the more exciting.
And both the events, two of the events you talked about, the us appearing at the Apple Store for MacBreak Weekly, and also the podcaster thing at the Apple Store on Thursday. Both of them have kind of meetup events afterwards. So if you want to hang out and say hi, that's a good chance to come out and
it's a big social event.
Giving out t-shirts and bumper stickers. No, we're not. But we should. We should get t-shirts and bumper stickers.
We're going to give away stuff. I don't know what it is, but
really?
I promise that we will give away.
We talk a lot about this kind of stuff, but are we actually going to make stuff?
I will give away more than $2,000 worth of goodies on Tuesday at 6 o'clock.
Now what? Now, is this going to be one of your like retail value kind of DVD courses, or are you going to give away actual physical stuff?
No, it'll be my retail DVD course. No, we've got lots of training in DV Garage. And so
I'm going to be giving away lots of costly advice.
No, Merlin, no, we have a lot of, we have software and we have, you know, training within the DV Garage, and then we have the Pixel Core, which will give away some free memberships, and then
Scott will be giving away iPhones too.
And I'll see if I can find this to us. Hopefully,
I will personally buy you an iPhone.
And then I'm gonna see if I can scare up some software from a couple other companies. And so we'll have some tchotchkes to give away. And Leo usually comes with pocket protectors and toothbrushes. So he's got toothbrushes. Have you gotten any Twit toothbrushes?
I've never gotten a toothbrush.
I have a Twit toothbrush somewhere, so I travel with it. It makes me feel very smart. Anyway, Dan, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having me.
Joining our insanity. And it was good to have you. And you can read more of Dan's musings at roughlydrafted.com. So definitely check that out. Merlin Mann, thanks for coming.
Thank you, Alex. It's always a delight.
And I have a new ending.
Ooh.
This was suggested actually on the twit.tv on the Mac Break section. It's Break Time is over.
I like that.
Do you like that?
Yeah, I like that.
So this is Alex Lindsay. You've been listening to Mac Break Weekly. Break Time is over. There we go.
That's good. Yeah.
I don't think we need to do an after show because the whole show was...
That was like 2.5 hours.
In fact, I think I should cut some of the after show.
Yeah.
I think I might cut some of the real show into the after show. Most of the stuff that I talked about, I'm going to move to the after show.
That was a long show.
It was a long show. I think if I cut it, you know, people are going to listen to it now and they're going to try to wonder what was in the after show and what was in the real show, because I'm going to move things around a little bit.
Right.
We got a nice clean recording. I can kind of have some fun with it, because I think we need to shorten the real show to something that's shorter than what we actually recorded.
There was that part where you talked about when you were in Cuba and you saw that show with the woman fucking the horse. I would cut out that entire section. Because that's,
you know, I'm gonna,
that might offend.
You know,
well, it's two things. First of all, you know, you shouldn't really be going to Cuba. Okay.
Right.
And second, it's a Mac show, so
it doesn't really have anything to do with the...
It's not directly related to Macs. If she was f***ing the horse while she was using a Mac, that would be cool.
I can see that. I think I might cut that out. And I think that the using your Mac on Mars, I think we're gonna cut that whole thing out.
The Mac on Mars part is just... It
wasn't that far out. Like, I got it. We were talking about that stuff, but I don't think that that's really... I don't think we really need to...
I had a lot of allergy medicine before I came here tonight, so I'm not really firing on all cylinders.
Yeah, yeah, and so I think we'll cut those things out, too.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to turn off the recording.
I wish you would.